Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer, creator of We Are Not Sam. Take a deep dive with me as I chat with global visionaries in conversations that uncover inconvenient truths, but also shine a light on how to be healthy, safe, and human in a technology-obsessed world. Let's get started. Welcome to the We Know Show. I'm your host, Renate Stralifer. My special guest for you today is Dana Martin. Dana, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Thank you. I'm so excited about this.
I'm going to do a little intro bio and we're going to jump straight into it. I know there have been a lot of questions asked of me on my Instagram page to explore with you, Dana. So I'm super excited to have this incredible opportunity with you today. So first of all, who is Dana Martin? Dana is an advocate, speaker, educator, and author of three books about parenting and homeschooling. Dana's been featured on The Dr. Phil Show, CNN, Nightline, The Jeff Probst Show, ABC's hit show Wife Swap, Fox News, 60 Minutes, and The Bethany Show. That's quite a lineup. She was used as an informational resource for homeschooling stories on the Discovery Channel, The Today Show, and Our America on the OWN Network, and also The Oprah Winfrey Show. She travels the world helping families change their lives by changing their parenting paradigm to bring more peace and connection to their lives with their children. Dana is a featured speaker at the major parenting and educational conferences worldwide, has been inspiring parents for almost two decades by sharing her experience through natural birth, attachment parenting, and unschooling. She loves traveling the world helping families change their lives by changing their parenting paradigm and bringing more peace and connection to their lives with their children. That's a nice intro, isn't it?
Thank you.
I have to say, Dana, when I first asked you to come on the show, I had seen quite a few of your interviews with Kelly Brogan. I saw one with Dr. Edith Ubuntu Chan. And these are obviously women that I'm friends with and very much admire. And I was just like, I need to be friends with Dana Martin because I feel like the direction I'm heading into as a parent and also as somebody who's very much conscious on raising a child that is free thinking. I honestly looked through your website and read some of your blogs and I was absolutely in full body goosebumps. Like I just had incredible confirmation through my body that what you have been embarking on and what you're continuing to do is some of the most important work that I feel is available to parents worldwide. And I just wanted to commend you and thank you for the incredible journey that you've been on. And I know we're going to take our audience through what that has looked like, but maybe let's start there and sort of explore sort of how you got to becoming this incredible voice featured across all these platforms. What was it that sparked that for you?
Well, I had no idea that I'd be an advocate for this life. So if you would have told me before kids, I wouldn't have believed you. I was in college and very shy. And I was studying early childhood education. And I got pregnant while I was in college and, you know, went on to, as I learned a lot about the different educational modalities, once I had a child, it really shifted for me because I was well educated, but I had never experienced being a mother. And being a mother flipped everything on its head for me because everybody around me was telling me after I had my first child, who is now 24, almost 24, that I needed to put him on a schedule and not hold him too much and not be manipulated by him and let him cry and, you know, all the more mainstream kind of detached parenting advice. And I very much that I would not do that. I had a natural birth, which was very empowering for me. I went on to become a childbirth teacher and doula. And I always listened to my children instead of what society said. And in doing so, back 24 years ago, I was rejected by family and friends, believe it or not. And so I was very much sitting with the decision many times, either I'm going to listen to my child, my son, and respect him, or listen to what others think of me and, you know, face that level of rejection while listening to my child. So I always chose my kids. And in doing so, I felt very alone. Never did I hesitate to do so. But thank goodness that the internet, I got the internet for the first time, I think like 6 months before my first child was born. And so there was these wonderful things called online communities, and that's where I found support and started supporting others. And so my journey just started there. I started speaking about it first online and then at different La Leche League events. So La Leche League is a, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but they are like a mothering and breastfeeding organization that are very focused on attachment style parenting. And I started speaking at events after becoming a leader and supporting people. And through my childbirth classes, I would promote attachment parenting and all the radical stuff that I got a reputation for, basically, in my community. Not vaccinating and all these things that, I have never vaccinated my kids. And this was back 24 years ago when, it's really more known now and more controversial. But back then, it was like next level controversial to not vaccinate. It was just like you were considered the craziest of the crazy. But little by little, I would support and educate people that were coming to me when they were pregnant. So I developed this community. So the first time I ever advocated unschooling publicly was on the Dr. Phil show. And this was, I think it was 16 years ago, 15 or 16 years ago was the first TV appearance. And it was funny because this was before Facebook. This is back in Yahoo group days when you had to go to Yahoo groups to support each other. And somebody posted in a Yahoo group that Dr. Phil was looking for homeschoolers to be on his show. And so, me being a radical unschooler, I'm like, I'm going to fill this out. And, jokingly, kind of like, never in a million years did I think I'd be asked to be on the show. And I wrote, "We are unschoolers and we don't believe in rules or punishments. And we believe in respecting children and we never do any formal schoolwork. We just honor our children." And I had no clue that I would be called. Well, I jokingly told, my husband at the time, "Oh, when Dr. Phil calls, tell him that, blah, blah, blah." And it was funny. And he did call. They did call. And the crew came for 12 hours and filmed us. And we ended up being flown out to LA. And we were on stage with Dr. Phil for the show, which I had no experience public speaking. Even my answers were terrible, really. I mean, it was just a matter of showing up and doing the best I could because they didn't tell us that we were going to be on stage. And so, although I didn't do the best job ever, I got up there and I did it. Many times with these opportunities that come our way to advocate and promote what is right and what we believe in, all that's required is showing up and doing the best you can, and you never have to be perfect. And so I definitely wasn't perfect, but this launched my career, saying yes to this experience despite my experience. Public speaking, despite everything, what guided me was parenting and, promoting this philosophy that was working for me and my family. And I wanted other people to know about it. And so since that time, we went on to be on like a dozen different TV shows, and it was considered such a crazy idea. But from the first TV show that I've ever been on, Dr. Phil, all the way to, the Jeff Probst talk show, for example, it went from being completely ridiculed. This is a 10-year time span with these two shows I'm talking about, and to being completely accepted, And so I saw this evolution just with the media, with through TV, of the evolution of children's rights and freedoms. And so this evolution is happening. I don't get asked to be on TV shows anymore, and I'm so happy. And you know why? Because this isn't that radical anymore. It's not TV worthy to say, "Look at this crazy person doing this." Now it's so widely accepted that I'm like, okay, the TV days are over, thank goodness. The last show I was on was Wife Swap, which was a crazy experience. And you can, anyone that's interested in seeing it, it's on Hulu, episode, excuse me, season 7, episode 4. But it is was an amazing experience that changed our lives and introduced millions of people to radical unschooling. So that is, as far as my becoming more renowned, that was a part of it. But I've also written 4 books. And I've spoken all over the world and organized events. So the TV stuff was more, the sensationalized kind of wildness. But on a more serious front, I do parenting coaching. I've written books. I've traveled the world speaking about this, even so far as China and India, places where it's considered really radical. But, speaking at major events, even put on by the government in India. So it's becoming more and more supported. And I'm just really happy. There's a lot more details into the story, but just so you can get to know me a little bit, that's how I became an advocate and how I started promoting
Wonderful
this.
story. And yeah, I think we're going to have to ask you how you what happened with your wife swap. What was that?
Well, I had never even seen the show. We didn't watch like TV really very much when my kids were little. We watched like Little Bear and Mr. Rogers and stuff when Devin was little, but we were more like outdoorsy at the time. He went on to be very much into gaming and technology. So, but just early on when we were, we just, so we didn't know the show. And I didn't know what it was at first. I'm like, what is this? That's a weird name. It's not what the name sounds like, but you do switch lives with another mother. And they contacted us. So let me just share with you also, like any of the TV stuff I've done, I never once ever reached out to anybody except for that very first Dr. Phil thing, filling the form out. And other than that, they all found me. Once you do one thing with TV, they find you. And so they found us somehow, I think through books and different more, things we're doing. So it went crazy. It was actually the most controversial show of the season. It was the most radically insane situation. They set us up with a woman who was really militant and strict, and my kids were having none of it. They were not going to be treated the way that they were treating her. She was treating them. So anyway, it was a crazy experience. On my end, it was beautiful. It was, and this was something my kids consensually decided to do. We had a family meeting when we were invited. We were paid to be on the show. This was the only TV show we ever were paid for. And we said, if you guys want to do this, this is what it's going to be like, and we'll split the money with you if it's something you want. Devin ended up going to Peru with his share with some unschoolers. Tiffany ended up getting a computer. Like they chose to do this, and they also knew that if there was any time they didn't want to be filmed during the 2 weeks, that they don't have to. Now that was hard to kind of talk to the crew about because we're like, this is our philosophy. And if the kids aren't into it, they are not going to be coerced to be filmed. Luckily that only happened once or twice, and so everything went smooth. But the family that I was with, it was a 17-year-old boy and a 11-year-old girl. And it was amazing. It was, they obviously loved you switch lives and then you have to live by their rules for a week. And then they, you write your rules for me. The rules are that there were no rules, basically. We live by principles, and the kids loved it. On my end, at my house with my children and their father, they did not love it very much, and they were kind of a little rebellious but respectful. The funny thing is, you're not allowed to stay in touch with the families at all. You're never supposed to talk again. It's not in a contract per se, but they just say, do not, you're done with these, do not contact them again. And I respected that. 10 years to the day of being on the show, I was contacted by the kids that I was in their lives. So that was really powerful. But yeah, you'll have to see it. It's keep in mind it's entertainment, but it's a really interesting way to see how the philosophy was conveyed, and the response to it was extremely positive.
Yeah,
Very much so. But it was crazy. It was crazy. My ex-husband,
that's
and the woman that was at the house got into a big issue, big fight. And she ended up leaving and never coming back, and she wouldn't finish the show. It was crazy.
a great way to set it up, isn't it?
We were all zen back in, San Diego, me with the kids and the family. We had the best time ever, like we're so zen. Everybody loved to hang out. They loved the philosophy. Not so much back there, but the kids said they enjoyed the experience and they would do it again. It was just the way that the finished product came out was kind of insane. So you'll have to see.
So
Anyway, thank you
I
for
think
sharing.
the question on everybody's mind right now listening is tell us about the philosophy of unschooling
Sure.
and how it differs from even how it differs, Dana, from homeschooling and obviously traditional forms of education.
Sure. I'm happy to share. So, radical unschooling is a parenting philosophy in what's called a partnership-based paradigm. Now, most people parent from something called the authoritarian parenting paradigm. So, 99% of parents are parenting from that space. In the authoritarian parenting paradigm, the focus is on the parent's needs, and the focus is also on behavior modification. So, I'm sure people have seen or heard of like Nanny 911, Super Nanny, all of these shows where the nanny comes in and corrects the kid's behavior, and they're easier to live with and more obedient after. So the authoritarian paradigm focuses on the parents' needs solely. The parents' needs for quiet, uninterrupted sleep, obedience and compliance, Very rarely does it take into account the children's needs. So what is that model to kids, though, being raised that way? And most of us were raised that way. It models that power rules, and that when we're bigger, then we can force other people to meet our needs, and that we don't meet our own needs. We need to manipulate and coerce and threaten and punish if people don't meet our needs. And it's just an absolute catastrophe, really, what it does to people. And it's convenience. It's done for convenience. It's like a convenience form of parenting. And it's also what I consider a very lazy form of parenting, because you create rules and then you punish when those rules aren't obeyed. But rules are a replacement for being present with kids. Rules are a replacement for taking the time, for not taking the time to meet a child's needs. And so a partnership-based paradigm is focused on meeting the needs of everyone in the family equally, not just the parents. So instead of focusing on behavior modification and correcting behavior and punishing and controlling behavior, it's focused on the needs under the behavior and caring about those. And it's a very hands-on approach. It's not for the lazy parent, because it takes a lot of time to focus on the needs of everyone in the family equally. Everybody's needs matter equally in the family, not just the adults, not just the parents. So that is the overall difference. But what does that do when we're modeling that everybody's needs matter? If children learn what they live and they learn by how we are in this world, when we are modeling that their needs matter too, they grow up just that's the way life is, that everybody's needs matter, not just the bigger ones, not just the ones controlling and punishing. And it's, in my opinion, it's literally the model for world peace. And it has, this is something that I have four children that I've raised this way. My youngest is 15 now. I have an 18-year-old, a 21-year-old, and a 24-year-old. And yeah, then this philosophy is powerful, and it's shifting the world. It really is. So that is the overall philosophy. When it comes to unschooling itself, so unschooling is not uneducating. That's really important to share. It's not uneducating. It is unschooling, meaning not doing school, not doing the institutionalized aspect of forced learning. So people confuse learning and forced learning all the time. In the radical unschooling philosophy and unschooling, we do not force learning ever. If children, they learn what they want to learn. And we bring as much of the world into their lives as possible to learn and grow from based on what they love and what they're interested in and what their passions are. So I'm not my child's teacher, like in a more traditional homeschooling sense or in the sense of school. I'm not their teacher. I'm not standing in front of them, pouring knowledge into them like the all-knowing authority based on what I think is good for them. That's not how this works. Instead, it's trusting that children will learn when not forced, because learning is like breathing. And it feels good. And what human doesn't want to learn what they're interested in? Just like anybody listening to this now, it feels good to be hearing all of this because you want to be learning about it. And children are the same. So my role is not their teacher, but I am their learning facilitator. So when they're interested in something, I bring as much into their lives to learn and grow from based on whatever their interests are. So again, it's very hands-on, but it's very passion-driven and it's very fun because I live life as though school doesn't exist. My kids have lived life as though school doesn't exist. We've never broken life down into subjects. We've never said ever. They've never done workbook. Isn't that crazy? Or anything schooly. We've never said this is math, English, science. We've just lived life and facilitated what they love doing. And in turn, though, they have learned more than kids in school ever learn. But it's a perfectly individualized education based on who they are as an individual. So we're not all meant to learn the same things in life. We're not meant to come in and have the same exact curriculum, the same exact, things that we have to learn in order to be successful. In fact, that keeps kids at a really different level than most people, could potentially thrive to be. So that's another whole discussion, isn't it? Like John Taylor Gatto, he was my mentor. And he was New York City Teacher of the Year for 4 years in a row. And he tells the story of how schools came to be. He was the first time I ever like heard about it and why schools were created. And they were created to, train the masses, educate the masses, to be good factory workers, and to, above all, train them to be obedient to authority. And that is the focus of most schools. But it's become, and the interesting thing is, I have to tell you this really quick. In the late 1800s, when compulsory schooling came to America, It was in Boston. And the Prussian model of education was what was being adopted by our government because they said this really works to get, people to obey this whole system. And we've been doing it, bring it there. Do you know that they had to bring children and then their parents by gunpoint to schools because parents refused this? Parents absolutely refused compulsory education. They were like, what are you doing? No way. And it was forced. 88% of parents did disagreed and like voted against it, saying, no, our families are doing just fine. Thank you. We don't want our kids to be forced to learn all this propaganda and these things and Pledge of Allegiance and like the whole system. They were forced against their will and they had to do it. And over time, it's just been morphed so much and so controlled that people, now believe it's good. Not only do they agree with it, they think it's good for their kids. That's how much conditioning and indoctrination's happened. So with unschooling, I do not want the premise of school at all. No forced learning, but unschooling is not uneducating. And that's something really important to realize. That unschoolers learn best when they're internally motivated and life is really fun and they grow up becoming who they're meant to be rather than who we think they should be. So,
So,
yes.
Dana, what does an unschooling life in the day look like and feel like, maybe is the better way to say it, for a child and a parent?
Well, it might look like what most people do on weekends. If you have total freedom that day and nobody has to work and nobody has to go to school, what do you do with your time? That would look different in every family, wouldn't it? Some people are more adventurous and they go, on a boat on the ocean for the day. Some people want cuddle time on the couch and to watch movies on a rainy day and make some great food. It just depends on the individual family. But our every day looks like a weekend in my life, and it has for 24 years. Sometimes we're traveling. Sometimes we're doing adventurous things. Sometimes we're kayaking and sometimes we're gardening. Sometimes we're volunteering at animal shelters. Sometimes we're taking care of our own animals. Sometimes we're painting and creating and doing clay and sculptures and opening Etsy stores and, exploring, making our own games. And like there's so many playing music. My kids are musicians as well. My daughter Ivy is playing right now somewhere, guitar and singing. My son Orion's studying piano. He wants to be a concert pianist, but he's also a game developer and he's 15. My son Devin, at this age, so I have grown unschoolers now, adult unschoolers. It is a hashtag adult unschoolers. I know thousands of adult unschoolers at this point, having been doing this for so long and supporting so many people. And so a typical day in the life of a unschooled young child looks very different. And I think that's the hardest aspect of it for parents is like, what should I be doing? What should I be doing with my child? And it depends on what they enjoy doing. And when they're really little, it's easy to kind of guide everything when they're 3, 4, 5 years old, because most kids that age, you're up for anything. They just want to be with you. And so at that age, we used to go out in the forest and build fairy houses and go visit farms and go to the children's museum and connect with other homeschoolers and things like that. And then as they got older, they were more interested in other things that I had to facilitate differently. My son Devin started becoming interested in blacksmithing. He played a video game online and they were gaming. I mean, blacksmithing in the game. And he said, I want to do this in real life. And I said, all right. So we found a lo local mentor, a blacksmith came over and taught him how to build a forge. And that took up weeks or months. And there was also a time period when he was 14 where he was one of the testers for the game Minecraft. He and other unschoolers played the beta version of the game Minecraft to work out any bugs for the creators of Minecraft for Notch. Isn't that crazy? We had no idea what Minecraft would become back then. I can still remember him telling me there's this game. And me, a bunch of us, unschooler friends, they were invited to do some bug testing for this game. So to work out the mistakes and stuff. And so he did that for like 4 months straight, never left his room really. I brought him up food, went to hang out with him. So, sometimes unschoolers are really, they're focused on whatever they're doing. And that might look different in every home, but I think it freaks parents out that aren't used to it to understand how children really do learn, because human learning looks really different than most people think. To go from like one activity to another every hour, every 2 hours, we think that that's natural, but it's not. It's like the opposite. In fact, humans, when they're learning and growing, they want to do nothing but what they're interested in. for hours, if days, weeks, months at a time. And that's how all of my kids were and how they all learned. That's how I learned, really. You get obsessed with something. You're studying something or learning something. I've been like really into herbalism and like it's all I want to do in my spare time. That's it, is learn about it. I'm not flighting from here. I'm going to garden for an hour. I'm going to do this for an hour. I'm going to do that for an hour. No, I'm into it and I'm so into learning about it that this is all I want to do. And so unschoolers, they get really, really into things that they're into, but a lot of parents get freaked out when it's technology, for example, because they're like, oh my gosh, all my kids do is game or all they do is this. And many of my coaching calls are surrounding supporting parents with these fears and like how to facilitate learning when they're into technology and so forth. So that was a really long answer for what does a typical day look like, but
No, it's actually perfect because where I wanted to go next is exactly where you just left
okay.
off, which is where those concerns from parents around technology, particularly. I mean, you've just touched on internet, television, books, video games, day trips, vacations, community resources, all of those things. But you say unschooling offers children more than that traditional schooling that, but the role of technology in unschooling is probably one of the most important topics to discuss today because I know that's something that our audience has very much been questioning.
The role of technology. So my kids have never had any limits or and I've never controlled their technology use. So let me just explain, just for those that are learning about unschooling. Radical unschooling is taking the freedom that children have with their education and extending it to other areas of their life. So this is touching on the children's rights aspect and the partnership-based paradigm aspect when I'm talking about radical unschooling. So my kids have never had limits, nor have I controlled, I give them information about things, but they've always had the freedom to use technology as much as they want. Now, this creates a very, balanced relationship with these things when you don't have control and limits. Because when something is being controlled or limited, a child develops a very unnatural relationship with it, technology, for example. And when something's being controlled or limited, children want to do nothing but that. It's just how it is. And so it's not just with technology, it's with anything being controlled, So my kids have always had freedom with any foods. They have had freedom with bedtimes, with hygiene, with technology, which makes most people go, oh my gosh, I could never do that. My child would do nothing but do this. They would do nothing but eat cookies. They would never brush their teeth. They would never, but you've also never probably known anyone that's lived in this paradigm because my children have always had moderation with things. Some of them have enjoyed technology more and been more learning focused with it. But they've never, they've always had a really healthy, balanced diet because they've had freedom with it. They go to bed when they're tired. They sleep as late as they need to. They've always been super healthy because of their own, sleep schedule. And their hygiene has always been, totally great. They've had to be reminded, did you brush your teeth? Can I help you brush your teeth? Let's get some new toothpaste. And here it's a very involved role giving a lot of information about these things. Like, oh, sweetie, you've been, gaming for a couple hours. Have you stretched your legs? Like, you want to go outside and go for a walk? Or, if you notice your child hasn't eaten much, bring them food, bring them a nice fruit plate or snacks that they like. And so it's a facilitation and a connection and a very present focused philosophy. Like where if your child is using technology a lot, go sit with them, find out what they're doing, like in a playful way, find out what their passions are, find out why they like Minecraft, engage with them, start a Minecraft channel together, learn how to play Minecraft yourself so you can engage and connect and buy them books about Minecraft and join a Minecraft club. And so whatever they're into, you become into and passionate about so you can connect with them with it. So, the big piece that parents really should understand is that if you've been limiting or controlling technology, and your child gets very upset when you take them off of, when you tell them they're done, you can't be on this anymore, no more. Parents blame the technology for that being negative behavior if a child gets upset. Child screams or gets upset, they blame the technology, which is so cruel because it's not that. It's the control that's causing the negative behavior, not the technology. And the child knows that. And so it's like really unfair, like the self-fulfilled prophecy that happens is a parent doesn't want their child on too much because they're afraid that they're going to like be unruly or crazy or disrespectful or violent. And then so they control it and they limit it. However, the controlling and limiting from a place of fear that the games and technology are going to cause this behavior, the way that it's approached actually is what causes that exact self-fulfilled prophecy and that same exact behavior. So it's a very like complex issue, and it's something that I work with parents through all the time, to really understand the truth of what's going on with technology. Does that make
Well,
sense?
I'm going to turn that into a clip then. I think in terms of what you've just said around trust, you've talked a lot about in some of the blogs that I've read that you've written around unschooling has a foundation of trust in children, and that's something that's pretty unheard of in our culture. Most of us were never, trusted as children, right? And so this has led to years, I would have imagined, of undoing for many adults as well to start trusting their inner voices, because we all talk about the ripple effect. So when you're not feeling the trust and you pass on that not feeling of trust to your children, and so it ripples and on it goes. But the undoing of that requires, like what you said as well, was like you're not going to do that anymore. And so that line in the sand moment that many parents are coming to today and have come to for the last few years, no doubt, for many reasons. But what does giving children freedom and trust in every area of their lives, what does that do?
Well, it's interesting because when we weren't trusted as kids ourselves, we never had any modeling. We not only do we not know how to trust our kids, but we never trusted ourselves either. Like we were never trusted. We didn't trust ourselves. So there's like no confidence to be able to parent from a place that I'm speaking about generally, unless you become a lot more self-aware and you heal from your own childhood and you do the inner work. A huge aspect of coming to a partnership-based paradigm is always kind of you always have like two voices in your head. You're saying your conditioned mind is saying, well, no, they can't do that. And then you have this other side of you going, but can they? Is this could this no be a yes? Is this, you're always examining your preconceived conditioning and asking, saying, well, actually, I can say yes to this because I'm going to be here. A good example would be when my son was like 4, he wanted to light a match. And I had that voice of just, oh God, no, danger, danger, fear. I would have never been able to light a match. And me saying, well, can I say yes to this? Could this be a yes? And I'm saying, well, if I'm here present with him and I'm showing him how and I'm holding him, we have a bowl of water and we're keeping it safe, there's no reason that I can't say yes to this and help him explore fire because he's very drawn to it. He always has been. Since he was a baby, he would stare at it for hours. A lot of times I looked back and I realized that the reason why I was told no for things was for one, it was inconvenient for my mother to sit with me while I explored things. She didn't want to, and nobody did back then. Nobody, it's funny in like the 70s, like the idea of like saying yes to your child, it just wasn't, parents had too much to do. My mother would say, I had too much to do. I was cooking and cleaning. I didn't have time to sit with you and watch you play, or and that was just the way it was. I was like, all right. But I wanted my son to be able to explore it because it was important to him. And so I can remember I would go down the cellar with him, and we had a big wood furnace. And I'd give him matches, and I would sit right next to him. And we had the thing of water, and I talked to him about it. And he would sit for hours lighting matches and lighting paper on fire in the wood furnace. While I sat next to him, I might have a magazine, and I'm, making sure he's okay and present with him. And he'd light candles and sit while I was doing dishes at the kitchen table and be playing with the hot wax. And he went on to become a blacksmith working with fire. He went on to become a poi twirler, teaching other kids and teens, mentoring them on how to twirl fire. His life was very, his childhood, his teen years, his young adult years were very focused around fire because he was always very passionate about it. Now he has a career. He makes knives and swords on Etsy and Etsy store, as well as other professions, because I said yes, because it all started there. Now, when we're in a fearful place and we're not being mindful and aware of our reactions, and we say no just because we just do, we don't think of it too much of our child's needs, we limit learning and we change the entire trajectory potentially of their life. And so this is just one of hundreds of examples in which I've said yes to my kids, and it's led them down a trajectory of part of becoming who they are. That's, saying yes to things, pushing myself, saying, oh, I'm really uncomfortable about this, but let's talk about it and let me find out. Let me try to decondition my mind out of a state of fear to be able to be present for you while you explore this, while you do this, while you experience this. And every time it led to more opportunities and more of them becoming happier and more fulfilled and more whole people. So it might seem like a really benign small thing when your child says, can I light a match? You don't even realize like the butterfly effect, the effect of that either yes or no, the impact it has on the entire future. And not only that, but the relationship with your child. The relationship is the foundation of this life. Unschooling is about reprioritizing. When you have a child in school, the institution forces their needs to come before that of the family. It just does. You have to ask permission from an institution, even with private schools, to spend time with your child. You have to get permission to spend time with your child. Now, that's not freedom. That is crazy. And I always felt that. And so unschooling isn't, excuse me, education is not the main goal of unschooling because we've completely reprioritized. The priority for unschooling and radical unschooling is family, connection, pursuing our passions, having a really good relationship with our kids, respecting them, modeling kindness, love, and that life is good. Life is joyful. It's a joy-based philosophy. And so education happens, but only as a side effect of all these other priorities that are much more important. Now, that might sound crazy to you, but unschoolers have a really good education when it's not fear-based and forced and the main focus of their lives, because education just happens, just like yours is happening now. Education happens as a side effect of living a rich, full, joy-based life together, pursuing what you want, facilitating that, loving life. And it's hugely powerful. And but most people think, like, can life be that good? Can I do this? Like, there's so many people that I've had say to me, like, I'm living this life and I'm like, is this allowed? I even had somebody say once, is this legal? Is it legal to be happy and to live in freedom and to not force your children to do something all day, every day? Yes, it's completely. I don't care about those kind of legalities, but some parents do. And yeah, so it's changing the world, I recently spoke in, well, I say recently, it was right before COVID. I spoke in China. And that was kind of intense to go in a communist country to speak about something that's illegal there. And so it was quite an ordeal to get me even in the country. I, couldn't say why I was there. It was sort of really intense. And I had so many families, I think we had like 40, which is a lot in a communist country, show up to this like underground talk about radical unschooling. And these parents were just like us, and they wanted freedom. And, that was a really powerful experience for me because I had a translator and parents were in tears saying, this is what we've wanted to do. And it really is so hard that we can't do this here. We have to be criminals to give our children the birthright that they have. And so I'm sharing this to share that we are very lucky if you live in a country where you can do this, because a lot of people have it a lot harder. Germany. It's pretty intense in some countries.
Wow, what that would have taken for you to go and speak in front of that crowd would have been, oh, I hope it's filmed, Dana, or that somewhere, somehow you can talk about that moment.
Well, it's not really, it wasn't really filmed, I don't think, because of the, because the country would not be happy with that. But we were there promoting freedom. Isn't that so? It was just really unbelievable. It was there was a few things filmed that we filmed with our phones, little clips of my talk and different things. But we're all the same all over the world. All parents want this. They want freedom and peace. And a lot of them, maybe some of you watching, like, you don't know how to get there. You don't know how this is possible. And I never planned parenting this way or educating this way, but I always listened to my kids and trusted them from the beginning. And that was the most rebellious thing, it still is, that you could do. And so if I'm a rebel and a radical for trusting my children, then so be it. But if you are too, you're not alone. We're here for you.
Yes, we're here for those rebels. Definitely, this is what the show is about. I think, there is, like you say, that sort of obedience and control model. And Especially over the last few years, you just talked about being in China right before COVID, but looking at the symptoms since COVID of adults who were trained to believe that life is about taking orders over the last few years, in particular, there is that essence that of the daddy government and looking at controlled authorities as that father mother figure, whether it's pharmaceutical or government, etc. So I'd like for you to speak into that because I feel like that is a domino effect of being raised in that model and then trying to, I guess, fulfill orders even when they so obviously are taking away joy and freedom.
Yeah, see, my kids never had that conditioning ever. So it was an absolute no-brainer. Like, it was really interesting to see the unschooled, teens and young adults who were raised in this paradigm navigate everything that's happened since 2020, like, and they just brush it off like an annoying flies. Like, of course we're not gonna do that. Or like they're not conditioned to take orders or be in a state of fear. And so they're kind of immune and invincible to what was happening. Like, and very different because even we weren't, we were still conditioned in a state of fear, many of us, even though we were opposing it and we wouldn't, obey and do the things that we were trying to be feared into doing. It still was part of our, consciousness on some level to be in a state of like, oh my gosh, and oh, this is really intense. My kids never felt that. And I really was happy to see the results of not conditioning them ever to take orders, and to respect themselves in that way and to educate themselves, because unschoolers are, it's important that your children learn to how to learn, and how to find information. And that's something that they're really good at. And so my kids would research all sides, alternative media. They'd, we talk about the mainstream narrative. My kids have always learned so much through sharing with them what's going on in the world, and talking about it. How do you feel about this? And it's a source of connection for us to share that. So, yeah, the more people that are educated this way, the less influence, government will have. And I think that's probably why many of us are viewed as like public enemy because, they're afraid of the influence that we have. And it's pretty intense for some of us in that way, trying to be silenced.
You just talked about sort of having those discussions, but what's been the role of like television and social media in unschooling? And what are those kind of like, I guess, implications of this? I'll say it, it's woke indoctrination. And how's that
Oh
affected
yeah.
unschooled children?
And my family, I don't think it's affected them at all. We talk about it. They think it's kind of ridiculous. And other families, like I can't speak for how it's affected them, to be honest with you, but I don't know many that it has affected. I think it's initiated discussion. Like it really has. And so to we the term woke is known, in many circles. But it's interesting because, like, I have a radical unschooling group on Facebook, and there's, I don't know, like 40,000 people in it, which is mind blowing to me because when I started, I was excited to get 100 people, back in 2010, I think, when I started that group. And in the group, it's interesting because there are unschoolers. Just because you're an unschooler doesn't mean you all think the same. And I'm sure there's unschoolers that got vaccinated. I'm sure there's unschoolers that are, more in that mindset. There was a lot of talk for a while and an argument about cultural appropriation. When these terms started coming to be, all of a sudden you see like any community kind of sometimes split and just argue over it. So I was watching this unfold with this like woke indoctrination stuff. And I'm just like, this is interesting because people seem really split with this in every community. And I'm like, this was the intention of it, wasn't it? We never had discourse like that before all of this came to be. And I'm seeing it unfold in my own community that I created, and so I'm just like, wow. And so that's when I realized that this is intentional in this way. And, however, I think a lot of it's really horrible what's happening. I don't focus on it, to be honest with you. I live life as though school doesn't exist. I'm not my kids. It's not something that I'm going to bring into their lives in a fear-based state. And because what's happening in schools has been happening, indoctrination's been happening for 25 years. And just because the woke, indoctrination's happening now, it doesn't change. My kids, that's been part of indoctrination in general, from the beginning. Nor did I bring it to their attention then all the time and talk about it. Now I'm an advocate for what I promote. I don't focus on what I'm against. That's just the woke indoctrination is just one of a thousand things on my list. You know what I mean? Of what I'm not going to focus on. Some advocates and some people really put it in, they really push that. They're more anti-school and they focus that. But my kids are in a state of freedom and joy, so I'm not focused on all that's broken. I commend those that do if they want to be in that space, but I'm not going to bring that negative, intense energy into my children's lives. I'm living this life for a reason, so they can be surrounded with peace and we focus on all the amazing things that are in this world, all the great things that are happening, and they're part of all of that. So, me personally, like I just don't focus on it. Look,
But
I'll see some reels and stuff that come up, and I'm like, whoa, but I'm not out there like promoting against it because I'm not school's like, not a thing part of that I want to really focus on.
I think that's because you've always had that from the beginning, whereas I think there are a lot of parents that are transitioning into this mindset that you've for quite some time. So they're helping their, I know that from my own personal experience, but also from so many around me in my community that are going through it. And it's, I think the difference is that we have to help our children understand the contrast. I think contrast is important. When I spoke to Kelly, our mutual friend Kelly Brogan, she said, we contrast is really important in life. It's like when you really need to pee, you really enjoy peeing. And when you really want to eat, you really enjoy eating. And so that contrast that we're helping our children uncover between an authoritarian type model and a partnership-based parenting paradigm, which is what you've been doing from day one. This is sort of for me why this conversation is so interesting, is that for many people listening, and probably I would say most people in listening right now, they're transitioning. So they're finding their ways into this world that is proving to be far more conducive to joy and freedom that you've experienced from the beginning. So I guess I'd love to lean into the transition.
So the great lead in because this is a really important part of the discussion. And I think a lot of parents think that they may not be able to live this life. And so they think, oh, that's not, I don't have the education, or I'm not confident enough, or I don't know enough, or if you were able to parent your baby, your newborn, intuitively, even if you weren't, even if you had to learn, you're able to live this life. You've just been maybe conditioned from the beginning to doubt yourself, and it happens starts happening with birth, within our culture, where a woman has to be rescued instead of being believed in, and that undermining of her confidence and ability starts to be eroded away, oftentimes from the beginning. So rebuilding that is entirely possible, no matter what your journey. But it has to come from a process that we call deschooling, and that's unbrainwashing yourself, deconditioning yourself of seeing things in schooly terms, seeing things broken down into subjects, realizing that the conditioning and brainwashing you've had of schools telling you that only certain things are educational and of value. That's all, those are all lies. Everything is of value. Everything is educational. You never have to break life down into subjects. You never have to look through the lenses, the schooly lenses that were put on you. You need to take them off. And you see the learning in everything your child's doing. And you're seeing the wonder and the beauty and the joy. And so the transition is really another word for it could be healing. The healing that needs to take place for you. And potentially your child if you're taking them out of school. So they say that the deschooling process for kids, kids come to unschooling really naturally because this is the most natural, intuitive way to be. This is how humans are meant to be. They're meant to be respected. They're meant to follow their bliss. They're meant to intuitively, be guided into what they're meant to do, meant to be in any given moment in their life. And so if a child has been in school, indoctrinated for a number of years, the deschooling process is to allow your child the freedom to be and do whatever they want with their time without interference, even if that means watching movies 24/7, even that means gaming 24/7, to heal and decompress. And they say a month of deschooling for every year your child was in school. It's like the rough kind of guide is different for every child. But so the transition period is to work on that fear, to get support. That's one thing I do specialize in is helping parents through this transition. It's like being a doula, When parents go through self-doubt, it's the same as when I support a woman in labor when she's in transition going through self-doubt. It's exactly the same kind of support, just in a little bit of a different shift. This is something I've been doing in birth work and parenting work, is having somebody as a guide to help support you and remind you what you're, what's normal, that this is perfectly okay and that all is well and you can do this. Now, that's what we need deep down, is because I think parents know on some intuitive level this is all natural. I mean, you just have to be, that has to be awoken within you again. Just like we need to remind women who are pregnant and they're in labor that you know how to do this and you can do this and I'm with you. It's the same thing. It's a continuum. That's what it all started with for me, is this is a continuum of the same exact, it all started with birth. This continuum of reminding yourself of what you know deep down that just needs to be uncovered and excavated again, because it's there. There's been so many times, like I'll tell parents, like, I'm not telling you anything you don't know deep down. I'm just reminding you. And maybe if you're listening to this and you're having that feeling like this sounds like truth, this sounds right, that's all it is, because you know this on a cellular level of this truth. So, finding support that can keep continually reminding you of it, that is the best way to move through the transition.
Wow. Yeah, I think, in the unschooling paradigm, you say that parents are facilitators of their children's interests and desires in life. And part of the fear that I've discussed with a bunch of parents that I know are transitioning into this more unschooling way of living, I would say, not educating, because I think that's what you've so brilliantly explained, that unschooling is not how you school, it's how you live. And there is a fear that we've all, it's very common. I think that's where our sort of common ground is there's this fear of not knowing, and that tension in the unknown of not knowing all the answers on subjects. And that's what school has pretty much marketed to parents, is that, we have the resources you don't have. And what you call laziness is sort of like why you're not accessing what you do know. And what's been your biggest challenge in your own journey, but also some of those obstacles that you've seen parents face when they are leaning into unschooling?
The biggest obstacle in my own journey, I don't really have a lot with unschooling itself. Like, for some reason, I've always trusted this philosophy. And I think that's just what led me here, like advocating for 20 years, because I know not everybody feels this way. I just always had this deep trust that went down so deep. I think as my, because all your kids have different needs, right? And so everybody asks the socialization question, like, what if, how are your kids going to be socialized? And how do they meet friends? And so as my kids, I knew their social needs because they told me. It wasn't a big guessing game. If they wanted to spend time with people, I'd facilitate that. And all my kids, we have four kids, so it was great. They all had each other, but they all had different social needs, and facilitating that was took a lot of creativity. I mean, and there was many times I drove my daughter Tiffany, who's 21 now, to New York, which was an 8-hour drive, so she could spend time with her friends who were unschooled, because there was nobody local that she got along with or liked or, kind of vibed with. So it's a lot of work in that way. So the biggest challenge, I think, like socially, not with all my kids, because my two youngest were completely, happy, and they had a lot of friends online and they had some friends in real life. But for like my daughter Tiffany, facilitating her social needs, because she was a very social kid, that took a lot of effort. I don't know if I'd say it was a challenge. It was just different than what a lot of people think. You have to put the effort in for your kids. Like many times in unschoolers, socialization is natural. It's very different. And so when I would get that question for interviews and stuff, it's the socialization question. It's comes up all the time, and I don't think people really think much about it, because I remember when I was in school, my first day of first grade, the teacher said, "You're not here to socialize," and I'll never forget that comment, because kids are told that all the time. And natural socialization is kids out in their community. It's just living life together. People of all different ages. In school, kids are age segregated, and they're only like socializing with kids that they didn't choose to be around. And they're only kids their same age usually, and then authority figures, which is a very unnatural dynamic. And I don't want my child like socialized anyway, which is kind of engineered to tolerate bullying, to deal with being around people, to be conditioned to be around people that they don't want to spend time with. I mean, that's been connected with being in abusive relationships because it's so normalized to like force have to be in these situations that you become numb to it. So you just easily slip into unhealthy relationships. My kids have never had that conditioning, which is nice. So the challenge is, I think, for a lot of parents, like realizing the responsibility, but not in a way that's fear-based, saying this is what it looks like. You know, this is technology is a really big part of most unschoolers' life, both socially, as a learning tool, as a means of connection with others. And so I think technology freedom is like the biggest challenge right now at this time in human history, but it wasn't always this way. You know, that's what's really interesting, being advocating for as long as I have. That the technology fear surrounding freedom of technology has only come to be since COVID. Isn't that funny? Because so many new parents are in, they're petrified of it. Prior to that, it was like foods. Like that was like the hot thing people would always want coaching with, giving food freedom. My parents had a really hard time with it because at that time in history, you know, 10 years ago maybe or so, all like a lot of like celiac and gluten intolerance and food coloring dangers, like food and parenting was like the hottest topic then. So a lot of the calls were surrounding that. So the fears that parents have to do with culture. And what's in the media as a fear right now is technology. It won't always be this way. I'm not sure what's going to be next, but I'll be ready for it.
Oh, that's really good. You know, when I asked our audience what kind of questions they had for you, Dana, one of the common ones was around, it's interesting that this is a question because I feel like this in itself leans towards trust, right? But I'm sure you'll have a better answer for it. Was around any research or supporting evidence on the effectiveness of unschooling?
Okay, so a good friend of mine, Peter Gray, he is a doctor and he has done a lot of research. So Peter and I have been friends since before he was even known in this realm. And he has done a lot of surveys and studies and he talks a lot about grown unschoolers. And so the research is fairly new. And it's interesting because there's not a lot of unschoolers that voluntarily would want to do it. See, the reason the research is new is because unschoolers, you know, most of the studies done on kids about technology or about anything, kids are forced to do these studies. They don't have freedom to choose. Nothing in their life they have freedom to choose. So unschoolers, because we live this philosophy, we say, would you like to take this test and be part of this study? They're like, no. Doing too many other things, because it's important to the adults that want to see evidence, but our kids are like, no, I'm not a guinea pig. I have no desire to do that. And so the reason why there's not a lot of information is because unschoolers have the freedom to choose and they don't want to be part of studies, most of them. But some have been, you know, voluntarily. My son Devin took part in one because he wanted to, because Peter was a, you know, friend of his. And Peter's spoken at many of my events. And so the studies that are done are that unschoolers are, you know, in every major college in the country right now, those that want to go, not all of them value it. I don't value college any more than self-education. I think college is a money pit for a lot of people and not necessary. But, you know, nonetheless, colleges are looking for unschoolers. They're very sought after because colleges want the diversity of all different educational models now. And they also love the self-motivated learning that unschoolers have because there aren't any unschoolers in college because they think they should go or their parents talk them into it. They're all there by choice because they really do want to learn, which is a much more positive experience for the colleges. So now they're looking, they are so sought after. My daughter-in-law, my son is married to another unschooler who we met at an unschooling conference that I hosted. And she was unschooled since second grade when her mother found my work. Isn't that crazy? And not that unschoolers only date other unschoolers. My daughter Ivy has a boyfriend who was, you know, went to mainstream school. But yeah, she was accepted into college right away. And she had never done any formal schoolwork at all after second grade. And we did a transcript where she's like, well, I don't know how to do this, but you know, let's find out how we do this. And so we translated everything she, you know, had done very easy. It was very easy. Filled out a transcript, sent it in, she got accepted right away, completed a college program. So it is so much easier than people think if your child wants to do it. You know, if your child wants a profession where college is necessary, they will easily get into college. They will easily, you know, pass, and because people don't realize how joyful, and yes, it might be a lot of work, but when a child is internally motivated But any human is internally motivated and they are reaching their own goals. Learning is not hard. It never needs to be forced. It's joyful and it's easy to accomplish their goals. So, yeah.
And do you find that children who never had to have grades, do they, in terms of university and how that sort of starts to manifest itself with an unschooled child going into a system that does grade, do you find, or have you heard stories, I should say, that that's a pretty easy sort of step?
Yeah, super easy. That's so funny. I just did a, so my daughter is Ivy is 18, and I just hosted a workshop with her last week, and I was so surprised we like sold out of this workshop because she had never done like a live workshop sharing about her life, like who is she, how what it was like for her as a child, and she was asked that question because she took is in taking some college courses right now because she wanted to be a veterinarian. She wants to be a veterinarian. And they asked her that, somebody did. She said, "I love taking tests. They're so fun. I've never taken them before. They're awesome." And like that is true. Like it's not hard. She's like, "It's not hard. It was nothing. Like I it was like a game. It was fun answering questions, seeing what I knew." And so there's no conditioning of tests being hard, of grades being a negative thing necessarily, because they're not used. Like they, we have She has no attachment to any of them. Of course, she's going to get good grades because she wants to be there and she wants to learn. She's like, she said, it's interesting in a lot of my classes, like nobody's paying attention. People are getting bad grades. It's like, why are you here? I don't understand why you're here. And so, like, having the conversation with her that most kids are in, even in college, against their will, they're doing it because their parents want them to. And so, it's something they think they should be doing. But it's sad because even if they think they want a profession going through college, the conditioning of doing the bare minimum and jumping through hoops and drudgery and doing things that you don't want to do has damaged them so much that even if they want to be going to college for something, the damage is deep and it's still present. They're not doing naturally the best they could, and they're still on some level not wanting to be there. Because they've been so conditioned to live this life of force and doing things against their will. So it's interesting the being controlled in school, that once you're in college, the automatic resistance to what you're perceiving as control by the authorities, even though you're there by choice, you're still pushing up against that, and doing poorly many times because of the damage from all the control for all those years. So we had some great conversations in this workshop. If anybody's interested in a copy of it, let me know, and I'm happy to give you that because it was a powerful workshop. So great question, very much.
The number one question I got, Dana, the absolute number one, was mothers who work, being able to create a safe unschooling space and workshop of interests at home. How would you suggest that mothers who are ready to take that leap go about that?
Are they working at home or working out of the home?
I
Is
would
it
assume out of the
out of
home.
the home? Okay. Well, it depends on the age of your child. There's a big difference between like a 6-year-old that can't be home alone and a 16-year-old who could be self-motivated and learning at home on their own while a parent works. So that is a totally different answer depending upon the age. But so there's a lot of co-ops. There's a lot of parents doing a lot of great things. And there's also, for example, a lot of single parents that are trading off childcare, working different hours. I believe that if it's something you want, that a way will become known. And so what seems like a hurdle or a challenge could just be another road to creativity. Maybe your child can go with you to work, sometimes asking and help. Maybe that's an option for them to be present with you. Or maybe another unschooling family can come over, and maybe your partner, if you have a partner, you can switch off and trade your work schedule at different hours, so somebody can always be home. So that's an option too.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the right, not right as in right or wrong, but I definitely feel so aligned what you're saying, because even myself, I work, I have an office, I have people that work in the agency I work for, and I still manage, and not always successfully, and we talk about the times where it gets hard and mummy's having a really, emotional day. But I do sense that there are ways and creative ways that parents can engage learning with their children, even if they're not fully present at all times, and finding trust within their village, I think, is really been incredibly supportive for me and the pods that I've myself set up as well. So I do believe that when you get, funnily, when you get cornered in the last few years, you find your tribe, and that's been a blessing in disguise, hasn't it? So we've all found each other and created ways forward and paved those ways forward for our children. And I think that's something that comes out of a necessary tension, like you said about birth. I have done so much research around how much is taken away from the instinct of a mother and the ability of the mother to really access that connection with her child by all the different mechanisms that are involved in the birthing process. And I feel like what we're doing as parents is we're always birthing the new. That necessary tension is a life force that helps and allows ways forward to be able to be coming through that portal of contraction in some moments. And I think that when we get through those moments and we embrace that as part of our human evolution, is that, we require those moments to be able to come back to ourselves and to guide our children back to themselves. I feel like the people I listen to most, and when I say listen to, I mean the people I resonate with the most, are those that guide you back to yourself. And I feel like that is why I love your work so much, is that you're not giving parents a plan of a curriculum of unschooling. I mean, that would just be counterproductive, wouldn't it? But you're actually guiding them back to their own instincts and their own understanding of how to be with family and how to be with joy and freedom. And that is that's instinctual. That is primal for mothers and for fathers in the ways in which we actually forgotten. Like when you said the story about how their parents were forced to bring their children, literally forced by weaponry to bring their children to school. I mean, that energy still exists. People in on an energetic level know that there's something within them. That first moment you drop off your child and they're crying and aching, not for you to leave, and going against that instinct. Every parent has some sort of reflection point in that moment of like that inner child in them, that moment they recognize that ability to be heard and felt is so recognizable in our society. And at the very bare minimum, we've all experienced a rewards and punishment, obedience and control type model. And to be able to sit with that and go within, I mean, recently I had my 40th birthday weekend last weekend, and I felt very fortunate that I've got my whole family here where I live, and also my tribe and my group of mamas and friends. And so over 2 days, the first day being with my family, and my mum and my cousin put together a video of my life, and I was so emotional. But honestly, this is the first time I'm talking about it. I don't think anyone in my family knew why I was emotional watching that video, because to them it was beautiful photos and video footage of me over the last 40 years. And it was, my mum pregnant and my mum holding me, and then my mum with me as I'm giving birth and holding my son, and the circle of life energy, right? It was me with my siblings, and also me holding their kids and them holding my kids, and just all of that dynamic. And it was beautifully presented and so heartfelt. But in that moment, I saw photos of me as a child. I realized in that moment, oh my gosh, I need to love her more. I found moments within myself that were so emotional that I had to sit with that for quite some time after and rewatch it to refeel that again. Because in some on some level, we're reparenting our inner child, that playfulness that still wants to come out, that child that still wants to be seen. And the next day, sitting with my girlfriends, and we're all mothers and we have kids, that range between, sort of 4 to, teenagers. And being able to reflect on that with a group of mums that I really trust and that have, we have such a strong foundation. We have to remember on so many levels that when we're parenting, it's not as simple as just trying to raise a child that's kind. There's no simple, end goal at the end of this. It's going through all of our own shadows and going through and feeling into our own inner child and being able to bring that honesty and bring that vulnerability into our family dynamic, rather than authoritarian. This is what it is. This is what you listen to because I'm older and you're not, and I've had more life experience and you haven't. And it's what I love about your work is you meet your child where you're both at, with all the things, with all of it. There's no like being seen as somebody by your child or being seen as somebody in your community. It is the number one and most important concept in my life is authenticity. I feel like everything, and I've interviewed, Vincent Tolman, who was pronounced dead for 45 minutes and put in a body bag and lives to tell the story. And he said the number one law that he realized, not law, but like rule of entering heaven, was to actually feel into your authenticity. It is the number one. You can't even express love at its deepest level without authenticity. And that really, like the more decades that kind of that you shed, the more authentic I feel you get. That's like kind of you see people that are older that are more and more authentic as time goes on. And but children have just this raw authenticity that we're trying to maneuver and trying to mold. And it's like, well, when we actually recognize that that is who they are, not who we want them to be. That is the beauty of what I feel, your incredible work has been able to achieve over so many decades is you listening and trusting and raising children to be who they already are and not who you want them to be. And that's a really big thing for parents to break within themselves. I know that for myself. And I just want to say that this interview has been so incredibly deep for me because I feel like there are things that you say that you sort of just say, and I'm like in that moment still like hanging like a peg that's barely hanging on because I'm just like, wow, I feel like there's so many decades of your work that people will be able to access now that they've just gotten sort of these trickles of gems from this interview. And I'd love for you to leave our audience, Dana, with, I guess, your final words of wisdom. And then we're going to get into where they can find and support your work. But your final words of wisdom, Dana.
I think one thing I want to share that's overlooked sometimes on this path is many parents know that they're wanting to do something better and give their kids freedom and the rights that they deserve and to have a joyful life without being controlled and limited and to have a parent present. And so we know that this life gives kids a better opportunity. I think most of us, that's what we're striving for. And a lot of kids are really robbed of the relationship with their parents because of the authoritarian paradigm. And when you're in the authoritarian paradigm, you never truly can connect. And without vulnerability and authenticity, because parents aren't allowed to be authentic and vulnerable in the authoritarian paradigm, they can't let their kids see them like that, from what they were told. And so the relationship can never be very deep. And parents, are robbed of the relationship with their children. Now we talk about that very little, but it's huge. The relationship that I have with my kids is the biggest blessing in my life. And the authoritarian paradigm of parenting robs not only children of their birthrights and what they're meant to have, but the parent too, hugely. And so, you hear parents complaining about teen rebellion and that life is so negative for so many parents because they're told they have to control all day, every day and punish. And life is not fun or joyful or the way it's meant to be by nature when you're controlling another human being all day, every day. So I want parents to have the gift that many never, ever, ever experience of what parenting is really meant to be. They're not meant, they never experience it, and that breaks my heart. And so this, you're doing this not just for your child and for their future, you're doing it for you, so you can have the richness of what you're meant to be and experience as a parent, in a relationship with other human beings that are so connected and filled with love, and you're reaching your full potential, and they're seeing that, and they're reaching their full potential. So I want you to have what you're meant to have as a parent.
I love that. And I put up a quote that I wanted to read out from a blog that you wrote, Dana, and it said, "Unschooling has a foundation of trust in children that is virtually unheard of in our culture because most of us were never trusted as children ourselves. This has led to years of undoing for many of us to rekindle our trust for our inner voices and abilities in life." So I just want to leave our audience by understanding and maybe asking the question, what would giving children freedom and trust in everyday areas of their lives do? Thank you, Dana Martin, for being on the We Know Show. We have so enjoyed having you on. And if you could just leave our audience with a website link or information as to where they can join, support, and find out more, that would be amazing.
Sure. So my website is danamartin.com, DANA martin.com. You can contact me through there. You can see different resources that I offer. I'm on Instagram, official Dana Martin, and I am on Facebook. And if you're interested, you could join my Facebook group and learn from other parents. Community is really important on this path, and I love facilitating that for people. So yeah, so I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to offer support in any way. And thank you so much for listening today.
Amazing. We'll have all that in the show notes for people to find, those that are listening. Thank you so much, Dana Martin. And just a reminder to everybody that our culture does need to realize that how we treat ourselves and our children is the most important responsibility we have for, as you say, Dana, peace in this world. Thank you and wow.
Thank you.
There you have it. Yes, technology does bring a sense of connection, but now you know there is another side behind the marketing curtain. So what can you do? Stay connected with us at wearenotsam.com. You can also find us on Instagram or Telegram at wearenotsam and subscribe to our channel. But most importantly, find your tribe and spread the word. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode of The We Know Show. Whilst the We Know Show presenters endeavour to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice. You should always seek the advice from a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the We Know Show podcasts.